This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 323 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This week's episode is brought to you by Brooklinen and Best Fiends. And this week's co-producer is Anna L. Co-producers are those very special spirits who support us on Patreon at the $10 level. And that is our highest level that we have. I mean, we're not going to say no if you want to give us more, but that's the only level that we created. That's the highest number. But anyway, this week's co-producer, as I said, is Anna L. So Anna L., thank you so much for your support.
Making your home beautiful is the ultimate form of self-care. And what better time than the new year to care for yourself?
And this new year, it's time to get comfortable, like with new bedding, loungewear, towels, and more.
Founded in 2014 by husband and wife, Vicky and Rich Fulop, who wanted to find beautiful home essentials that didn't cost an arm and a leg, with the mission to make you comfortable.
They've moved beyond the bedroom to offer essentials for your bathroom, like towels, shower curtains, and bath mats, and even launched ultra-soft loungewear that makes you feel like you've never left your bed.
Like softness, comfort, essentials to help you relax, Brooklinen has it all. Brooklinen.com is the perfect place to hit refresh in the new year. Go on, make yourself comfortable.
Brooklinen is so confident in their product that all their sheets, comforters, loungewear, and towels come with a lifetime warranty. Get 10% off your first order and free shipping on all new sheets when you use promo code Outlander. Only at brooklinen.com.
That's brooklinen.com. Brooklinen, everything you need to live your most comfortable life. And now, on to our read-along. This week, we are continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along.
You're not wrong. We are continuing. But what's more important, you got to say something.
What?
We are continuing it, but...
But what?
This is the...
Penultimate?
You used it correctly. Absolutely, it is. I wasn't even asking for that, but yes.
I was actually just pulling up my calendar to verify, because I mean, I know it's true. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I love you.
I've never heard that. Have I?
No, it's true. Is that Milli Vanilli?
Oh, ooh, Lord have mercy. Milli Vanilli, yeah.
Oh my God. I heard Milli Vanilli in the car the other day. Blame it on the raid.
Are they alive? No.
One of them is definitely dead.
They both died? Oh, one died. Oh.
They might both be dead. I do know that one of them definitely died.
How did he die?
I'm sure it was drugs.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And this week, we are continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along. And after careful consideration, I have verified with 100% authenticity that this is the penultimate The Fiery Cross read-along episode. We will be reading chapters one. Not reading. We already read them. We will be...
That's Davina's job.
Talking about...
Job, not ours.
We will be discussing four chapters tonight and then following up with next week's episode when we will finish our The Fiery Cross read-along. And it's only taken us, what, a year? Is that what you said the other day?
It was last February when maybe we didn't start, but when we were early, early days. So it will have, I don't think it will have been exactly a year. It might be just a year or just under a year, because we will finish the first week of February 2020.
Lousy, lousy. Well, then let's get started. We're going to start this week with 102, entitled The Battle of Wily's Landing.
So we don't get a date at the top of this chapter, but I believe it's a bit after the trip to see the dead whale. So the next day or a day or two later. There was a conversation about picking something up or stuff coming to shore at Wily's Landing. And this is during the time they're staying on the coast. So all together in that room with the small windows or no windows. So here are Jamie and Roger waiting on the water. So all that to say brings us up. The chapter opens with Jamie and Roger on the water in a skiff or whatever they called it. Yeah. And Duff, and I think Peter too, Peter Butler, is there. The landing, Wiley's landing, consisted of, quote, a short wooden dock on pilings and a collection of ramshackle sheds adjoining it, unquote. So Jamie and Roger have guns.
Do we know why it's called Wiley's Landing?
Paul Philip Wiley owns it.
Did we know that before this?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they've got guns. They're looking to face Bonnet. And they're worried about moisture in the air because, of course, if there's any moisture, the powder will clump and your guns won't fire.
I found this whole section ironic, given what happens in the next chapter. This whole section right here. They're all the fuss about keeping their powder dry.
Depending on when the tide came in and whether or not Bonnet wanted to chance darkness, they might have to wait a bit before things push comes to shove and they get the result that they're looking for, or any result. So they disembark onto the dock. Jamie had made arrangements with Duff et al., I believe, at the last possible moment, meaning to go out there and to let him in on as much as he let him in on, to be taken out there at the last possible moment so that there was no way Bonnet would be able to be reached before their attempted ambush. So he would be surprised and wouldn't have a heads up. If he survived, Jamie survived, then he'd pay. So he's already paid some of the money to Duff for his part in this. If he survived, he'd pay him the rest. If he died, Claire would pay him the rest. Like, that's positive thinking. At least he's got a backup plan. So they explore the sheds to make sure they're empty. And they're hanging out in the largest shed. The plan was to shoot Bonnet as soon as they saw him. And Roger says he'd like to do it. Fine, Jamie says. If you fail, I will avenge you. Glad that's settled. I just love that Jamie's so positive.
Well, no. And then he was so gracious to accept Roger's, you know, identical statement. And Roger's like, oh, and I'll avenge you.
Roger returns the favor, quote, great. And if you fall, I'll avenge you. A bargain, is it? Unquote. And I just wrote in all caps, ha, 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 ha. Because, I mean, it's kind of, I don't hate Roger. I am not a Roger hater.
I mean, he's
not a laughable. Jamie.
It's a little laughable, right?
It's a lot laughable. You stop. It is a lot laughable. Quote, Fraser didn't laugh. And in that moment, Roger understood why men would follow him anywhere to do anything, unquote. But what you haven't read is Diana's first draft of this scene, which is Fraser let out a loud guffaw, fell onto the ground, rolled onto his back, and literally pissed himself laughing.
Well, that's too much honesty. We don't want honesty.
No, that's why she got rid of it. Come on, I'm telling you. A boat comes up and someone climbs onto the dock and Roger throws down. Oops, it's a woman. Tall as Bree, but more solidly built. He lets the woman go and she basically, once she had gotten over her surprise, she's not upset. She doesn't want to like hurt him or get her, you know, get revenge. She basically makes him an offer. She like grabs her boobs and is like, you want to do it? No thanks, Rog says. Then comes Jamie in to save the day. That was not quite right, but I'm thinking Mighty Mouse, but those are the wrong notes. And she is speaking a language for the first time in all the books that Jamie doesn't know. But just give him 5 minutes. He'll be conversational. Another few people come in. They finally figure out that the dude speaks un peu French and he is Russian. They are here with their pigs for Wiley. And then they actually hear the pigs. Jamie and Roger stay out of the way as they look to see who the other people arriving were because we have no visitors here. Jamie dives to one side just in time, but Roger hesitated too long and got a musket into his rib. So not a shot, not a ball, but like a butt or something. He was hit, physically hit. And they took his dirk and his guns. Now, some of the dudes from the second boat were holding on to some other Russian women. It's mother women who we find out later are Russian. So it's the sisters of the woman who propositioned Roger, basically. So what the heck happened? No bonnet? As chaos died down, Roger recognized one of the men as Sheriff of Orange County, David Anstruther. Four Russian women had been rounded up and were put into the large shed. Their dude was dragged there too. We find out later that's the father, the only Russian dude, but the father of the girls. Then one Randall Lillywhite pulls himself up onto the dock. He asks Roger about Jamie. And Roger says he's in Wilmington. And then he asks Lillywhite about Bonnet. Lillywhite also says he's in Wilmington. And he's laughing as he says it. So it's safe to say that he's not there, right? Not there. He's not going to be showing up most likely in this chapter. Lillywhite wants to know where Jamie and the whiskey are. And Roger says he hasn't hidden it and there isn't any whiskey. Anstruther, the sheriff, punches Roger. And Lillywhite and Anstruther obviously aren't with the Russians and their pigs. They have no clue about them, like what's going on. They're not part of that gang. Lillywhite is aware of Jamie's arrangement with Lion. He says that he's assuming Lion's part of the agreement. Plus, give me the whiskey, thanks. Jamie, however, has made other arrangements. That's what Roger says. And Roger was sent to say that in place of Jamie. Jamie wasn't there. Touché, baby. Mm-mm. This episode is going to be a lot of summer uh-uhing me, I think. Using information from Duff, this is Roger. He tells Lillywhite that he'd arrived overland from Edenton. So while they're on the boat, they found out that Wiley had a road built in or a road set up out of shell or covered in shell. And so he had this information, so he used it to tell them. He said he hadn't come via sea or by water. He had come via the road from Edenton. So they put him in with the Russians. Now, there was definitely a connection between Bonnet and Lillywhite. Roger is worried now that they might try to kill him to keep him from talking.
There was definitely a connection between the Russian daughters and Roger.
Oh, Lord. Well, they wanted a connection.
At least a desired connection.
Oh, that it's very much so. And rain falls angry on the tin roof. A summer and I lie awake in our bed.
No, too far. Why are we together?
Sorry.
Why are we together in a bed?
Sorry,
why?
Sorry. I meant, why? Quote, a light pattering rang on the tin roof, unquote. It was rain, though. One of the Russians, I think her name comes out, it's Karina, unsheathes one of his swords. Roger's like in the room, in the shed with the Russians, in an opposite corner from them.
That's not a euphemism.
No, it really happened, or it's really written. In the short time the Russians had been in the shed, they'd found a trap door in the floor. Now, would you call that a grange?
There's a lot of grange about to happen.
Yes, and we have commenters asking about granges.
I feel like, the way Diana wraps up all of her books is in gigantic grange leaps and bounds.
Yes. I think you're right.
And there's a few in this chapter, even more in 104. Like, every last murder mystery of this book is being wrapped up in these next few chapters.
Yes. Okay. Roger strips to his breeks and he goes down through the trap door and he drops feet first into the water and he goes underwater. It's a little bit deeper. It goes over his head a little bit. He swims to the far end of the wharf. From the roof of the shed, Jamie watches the scene with the sheriff and Lillywhite. He listens as they discuss how they want to kill them all, the Russians and Roger. He plans to move along the roof to the sheds, pounce on them when they enter the sheds. As he's getting ready to pounce, he sees men coming out of the woods. They were all black, meaning most of the men were black, except for one, Wiley. Jamie lies back down. Roger, who's been swimming, swims to shore and into the weeds, and an enslaved man, so some enslaved man, with a spear, tries to spear him like a fish. Wiley meets with Jamie and Roger, too. They tell him the status of his Russians And they ask him, like, why the pigs? Like, what's up with the pigs? And, well, he says, to hunt on my property.
Could you imagine
nowadays
trying to get just randomly, no, not even just pigs, like a very specific breed of pig that is not normally found here. Could you imagine trying to get one of those things through immigration?
No, no, I could.
Because I was thinking of, he was talking about, oh, well, these are pigs from, these wild boars from Russia. They're amazing and they're bred for their this and their that. And that sounds great, but you're just going to introduce it to the ecosystem? That doesn't sound like a fantastic idea, but that's, you know, 20th century eyeballs and brains looking back at,
yes,
18th century, I want this. And no one's here to tell me no.
They all approach the sheds together, and Lilywhite and the sheriff were gone. They are offered their weapons back, and they take off with Wiley. Now, as they're going away, they walk into the woods on the way. As they chat, Roger's head pops. No, not pops open, but pops. He's a pop on the head, and everything goes black. When he comes to, he hears fighting. He can hear that Jamie is still alive, and he gets up, stumbles around, he grabs his sword, and he steps on the sheriff's leg as he's walking around, and he notices that he was dead. Jamie, at this time, sees Roger is alive. They fight with swords, and Roger's sword, this is gross. I don't know how I don't see, I don't, this is something you don't forget. I don't know how I ever missed this, but I've missed a lot of stuff when I did do the close reading. Roger's sword goes into Lilywhite's eye. Like, that's pretty, you don't forget that, right? And he couldn't get the sword free. I'm like, how come I didn't remember this?
Because look how close we are to the end. Do you know how hard it was to stop?
I know. Well, no, it wasn't.
And I've been listening. I listen mostly in my car during my commutes. And, you know, I've got about 30 minutes each way. And I was listening to 103. And I got home right in the climax of the interaction that happens in 103. And I was like, do I sit here and wait in my car, even though I have things to do? Or do I, you know, save it for tomorrow? And I listened to a little bit more till I felt safe enough to walk away from it. But yeah, it was hard to get out. When you get that close to the end, it's hard to stop. It's the momentum of the downhill.
Listening maybe, but reading and taking notes, no, I'm good. When I'm ready to stop, when I stop, because it's a lot. And I have about 17 plates in the air right now. So I just do what I need to do. So he couldn't get the sword free. Jamie rescues him and holds on to him while he pukes. He's there with him. I think Jamie got the sword free. I thought I read it, but I didn't write it down.
Like it was, he got the sword free like it was Excalibur.
Yeah. So they leave the bodies for the pigs. They don't even bury them. And as they leave, they walk by Wiley's house. So what the heck happened? The first thing that Jamie saw was when the sheriff clubbed Roger. They wanted them dead. Or at least someone did. Was it Bonnet, perhaps? Very likely. And when Roger says Bonnet is in Wilmington, it wasn't a joke.
Nope, and it's bad news.
Though Jamie hopes it was a joke. Because we know who is in Wilmington, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only everyone.
Well, we know where they were last.
Well, they left them in Wilmington to go do this thing, and then they're going to come back. They're not going to have them leave without them coming back. Or at least that wasn't the plan.
I don't know. This must be the first time anyone has successfully told Claire to not go somewhere or to stay put, and she actually stayed. Moving right along to chapter 103, entitled Among the Myrtles, which sounds like such an innocuous title, but this is a really scary chapter.
Sounds like a really sweet title. Sweet title. Sweet chapter, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's in the trees.
We are in Wilmington. Here's what's been happening while Jamie and Roger were out getting theirs. We're back in Claire's POV. She's with her homegirls. They've kept themselves busy. There'd been an argument before the men left. Claire had refused to take sides. And this, of course, is the argument about what they were going to do, you know, that they were leaving to go do this, to meet or surprise Bonnet and kill him, etc. Claire refused to take sides. Bree and Jamie both wouldn't budge. Beyond what Bonnet had done to Brianna, there was also the fact that Jamie felt extra guilty that they'd initially aided Bonnet and he'd somehow contributed to the rape of his daughter.
But let's talk for a minute. Everything you just said is true. My question, though, is how did he really think that his plan was going to work? I mean, his plan hinged upon...
surprise.
Well, surprise and being anonymous to Stephen Bonnet. But by asking specifically for Stephen Bonnet to a go-between who knows them both, what... I mean, the odds of that person saying, hey, I got a smuggling venture for you. It's, you know, whatever whiskey, of him not going... cool, cool. Who's it for? That guy's not going to be like, oh, just some mountain dude.
Just some mountain dude. I mean,
they're putting their lives on the line. Everyone wants to know everyone's name when they're doing stuff like this, right?
Yeah.
And Stephen Bonnet knew their names. So it's not like they have any anonymity from him.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I thought it was a flawed plan.
Roger ends things, as far as the back and forth, by saying, look, we're going. Do we go with or without your blessing? That's one way to end it.
Or to stop the cop. Using Marsali's tactics.
Oh, Lord. No one had slept the night before the big day. When they had, meaning the day that, I guess, Frank. Oh, my gosh.
Nope.
The day Frank left. The day Roger. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Or actually, yeah. It's been 200 years from now. The day that Jamie and Roger left. So, basically, Claire and Brianna and Marsali, their whole thing is basically to keep people fed, keep the kids entertained. You know, they've got to basically do a whole lot of nothing, just camp out for a few days before to wait for Roger and Jamie to come back.
And my immediate question during this chapter was, how far away is Wiley's Landing from Wilmington? And because, I mean, there's absolutely no chance of Roger and Jamie showing up and saving the day. There's just not. There's no chance. No. This whole thing is supposedly happening at the same time, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So I wondered how long after this chapter, the next chapter happens, because it seemed like they were back to back, but nobody ever discussed. We waited a day in our rented rooms. We never left waiting for them to come back. It took them however many days to come back from their whatever.
Well,
it was just never discussed, and I just...
We'll have to get to the answer to that second part maybe in the next chapter. But as far as how long they were alone, the women and the kids, I wrote, no one had slept the night before the big day. So if that's the night before... Oh, that's right. It is, because Claire had...
Like, but is the big day the day they leave
correct.
To go do the
yes.
thing? Oh, but because how long does it take from the big day that they leave to go do the thing to the day that they do the thing?
That's what I'm getting to. So the night before the big day, they couldn't sleep. And the reason she couldn't sleep is because, like, it was like, you know, anxiety and everything, prepping for the next day, what might be the last day, all that stuff. So no one could sleep. So that gives us a little bit of like an idea of identifying where or when we're talking about. And then, if I'm not mistaken, they went to this show. They went to this music performance 3 nights in a row. So that's, or at least two. So it's either two days, 2 nights, and then it happens on this chapter happens on the third day, or it's 3 nights and this happens on the fourth day, because it's at one of the performances that Claire smells the beautiful myrtle candles, wax myrtle right. candles, and she wants some. So she talks to, I think, the landlady or something. She borrows buckets to go collect wax myrtle leaves, and they plan a picnic with the kiddos. And the same person, I think it's the landlady, who lent them the bucket, urges them to take a pistol with them because, you know, snakes. So Claire's like, oh, whatever. So she puts it in the bottom of one of the berry buckets. They had 6 buckets. And they had a big wagon that they pulled the kids in. So they walk along the bushes, well, trees. And then they get there and they leave the wagon. It becomes too much of a drag, like literally to pull that or to work with it. So they left the wagon and then completed the distance on foot with them, the kids, and all their buckets. And they split up. Claire puts Jemmy down and then hears footsteps. Well, they're like on a sandy, beachy-ish area. So, of course, I think it was footsteps on like kind of crunching leaves or making noise on something. She thinks it's Bree, but it's not.
Mm-mm.
It is B. It's a B, but it's not her B. It's Bonnet. And she thinks, oh, holy heck. If Bonnet is here, she has like a really like a good thought in a way. If Bonnet's here, Jamie and Roger are safe. She urges
Gemma. She clearly didn't finish this chapter before making that assumption.
She urges Gemma to go to his mom. He throws a rat at Bonnet and runs away. I tell you, keep an eye out on that Gemma. That Gemma is like, it's not a spoiler to say he's still with us in book eight. He's very entertaining. Just, and he like, he gets stuff done. He's just, you want him as a pal. He's a good little dude.
Don't you want to change his name to Gavroche?
Gavroche? No, that was Wee Fergus.
Okay, fine.
And then out marches Jemmy.
Who's the pick two people out of the group you didn't want to walk into that scene?
Him and Bree.
And his mom. And
great. So Claire grabs him and backs up and they have a chat. So one of the things that I find, I am not shaming Claire or any woman at any age who has a child of whatever, by whatever means, adoption, natural, whatever. But for Claire to say, that Jemmy was hers, I mean,
it was totally possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And she looks better for her age than most of the ladies of that time.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. So. It's not impossible, but it was just, I guess it's just because we have Claire. We are with Claire, right? We have been with Claire since the beginning, at least. Beginning of Outlander.
I mean, I've never been with Claire.
Summer.
Also, I think I'm more concerned about her glass face than I am about anything else. So anytime she starts lying, I'm like, great, they're sunk.
Or they're all dead.
No, and if I'm not wrong, I believe at some point in this chapter, she calls him Steven, and it really grossed me out because he's been Bonnet. Everyone calls him Bonnet, and she calls him by his first name in this chapter, and I'm just like, skeevies.
Oh, no. So they have a chat and Claire tells him that Bree isn't there. Rather, she's at home with her husband. And Claire says that her husband will be along any moment. And Bonnet's all, nah, he's dead by now.
Yeah.
Again, we get confirmation that it had been. Okay, here's what Summer was talking. Like, get ready. The next paragraph, the next like 3 minutes of chat or more is going to be exactly what Summer warned about last chapter. We get confirmation that it had been Lieutenant Wolf who'd killed Betty. Dang, he is spilling all the beans.
No, he's spilling the tea.
I mean, but also the beans, like spilling the beans, okay, is also like, you know, giving up all the secrets. It was Wolf. He'd found out about the gold, which brought Bonnet along. Quote, the doctor saw the gold. See? Unquote. Oh, so now we have a little bit more of an idea of what may have happened to Rawlings. Dang, this thing goes deep.
Grange.
Just a little bit. So the doctor met with Wolf. They drank together. The doctor let out, when he was drunk, that he had seen some gold. Wolf, even more determined to marry Jocasta. So he involved Lilywhite. That's why the priest was arrested at the gathering. When Betty got Duncan's cup, she didn't die. She was knocked out. But she would have, when she woke up, she would have been able to identify who gave her the cup. So Wolf put the ground glass in her gruel they were feeding her upstairs in her quarters. How is Bonnet involved? Well, he's a friend of Wolf's. So when they'd captured Jocasta, she lied to them about the gold. But then Bonnet thought maybe she wouldn't be lying if it came down to her heir, nodding at Jemmy while he says this. Jem and Bonnet argue about his paternity. Who's your daddy? Who's that? That's not my daddy. However, Davina does it. So since the wedding had been a disaster for them, they needed to make sure Jocasta had no menfolk around to protect her. So he used this opportunity through Lion to get rid of Roger and Jamie at the same time. That's his plan.
Does he realize that Mackenzie is Bree's husband? I don't think he does.
Oh, he may not.
Because he just keeps referring to Mackenzie and Fraser. But, you know, it felt very, I just know the dude's last name and not, you know, I've killed your husband. Now I can have the mother of my child and my child back. I've moved everyone out of the way. I don't think he realizes how much of everyone out of the way he was going to get him if he'd actually succeeded.
Yes. Claire turns and puts Jemmy down and tells him to run. As Bonnet crashes into her, she blocks him from following Wee Jem. She grabs his gun, throws it out behind him, and they fall to the ground together. And then he freezes. Mama Marsali has grabbed the gun.
I'm getting buffalo flashbacks.
Buffalo.
Bison?
Oh, huh. So Bonnet is holding Claire and holding a knife to her neck. And Marsali has a gun. And Claire is telling her, shoot me. Shoot him. Shoot him. Don't worry about me. Shoot him. Then Bree shows up. Wait, what if Marsali couldn't do it? Bree wants to save her mom. And Claire's like, don't listen. Just listen to me. Shoot him now. He is not. If you don't do this, you know how this will end. He will not save us.
No,
he will kill us anyway.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's dead, regardless of what he says.
Yes. Yeah, so shoot him now. This is your only chance. So this talk from Claire, that's rough. That's like that was a little bit hard to read, you know,
from Dr. Claire. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's do funny. No harm. First, do no harm.
So she fires. She actually does fire, but it was a misfire.
The saddest misfire in the world. Like, I could literally hear it going, wah, wah, as it was like, as she tilted the pistol down and the shot, like, fell out of the end onto the sand. I was like,
oh, my gosh.
And all that talk about, like, wet powder in the previous chapter, like I was saying, right? I was like, it was like, yep. They were giving, it felt like, you know, when the movies, when they mention something in the first 10 minutes that you know is going to come back later.
Well, it's like when
it was like,
yeah,
that.
It's like when Claire pumps someone up, you know, they're about to be killed in the next chapter or later in the book. Bree grabs one of the buckets and throws it at Bonnet's head. She hits him. Kids are crying. Joni is screaming. Claire uses this opportunity to run and hide behind a bush. As Bonnet makes to take Bree and Jem by force, Brianna raises the gun, Bonnet's own gun, and aims at his balls.
How is that not like the best? Like, I want to find the quote because it was amazing.
She wants to harm or destroy Leroy.
Well, of course, Leroy. But that's not it. That's not it. Because what she says is she says, oh, she's the one who calls him Steven. She goes, what about it? She whispered. Do you keep your powder dry, Steven?
Oh, that's like sexy talk. What are you doing? Don't, Bree, get away.
I know. It was like, I mean, I know it wasn't sexy talk, but it was.
No, it wasn't. But it was like,
do you keep? No. I mean, I did read it that way, but that's not.
Yes, you did.
That's not how it was. But still, it was just like, you know, your fate is in your own hands here, Steven.
Yes. Steven. So she hits him in the balls. But we don't, well, she hits him in the crotch somewhere. We don't know yet.
Well, he's bleeding from someplace in that area, but his hand was in front of it.
He's holding his crotch and he's also holding his lower abdomen. So all we know is that he's hit somewhere there and he's bleeding. He's in pain. So he blunders off. So as they go back to the city, Claire says, quote, I think we'll make do with unscented candles for now.
Ugh.
Unquote.
I mean, at that point, he's gone. He's not coming back. Get your myrtles.
That's the title. Get your myrtles, Claire. Get your damn myrtle.
I'm just saying. I'm like, I mean, at this point, and just think, she has so many bees. She's going to have so much honeycomb mix these myrtles with later.
So many bees. They last till book 9. I'm just kidding. I don't know. So remember we were talking about the length of how long people were gone or how long, whatever?
Yes.
So I had said at the beginning of this chapter that the night before, no one could sleep, right? So the night before, the two dudes left because it was the crazy, uncomfortable anticipation of them leaving, right? Because they might be killed or something.
Well, that's what sets the whole thing in motion, yeah.
So, but I'm saying as a marker of time. So the night before is, we'll call that day one. The night before is zero, day one is the day they leave. So on that day and the next, or at least two of the days, and it could be 3 days, but I'm going to be conservative with the number and say two. At least two times, if not three, Brianna and Claire and the kiddos and everybody go to this nighttime performance musicale thing. And it's there that she smells the myrtle candles. But she goes more than once, and it's only in the evening, so it's at least two times. So if we say that the dudes have been gone for 2 days, let's say, and so the picnic slash bonnet slash balls day would be day three, if that's correct, right? So the dudes have been gone for 3 days the day Bonnet is shot, if I'm correct about how many days there have been with the evening thing. Later in this chapter, it says that 2 days later, Roger and Jamie show up.
Oh my God, this is like the worst word problem in math.
Conservatively, they've been gone for 3 days and they show up 2 days later. So they've been gone conservatively at least 5 days. Now, it could have taken them a half day or whatever to get to where they're going, but it took them a lot longer to come back because they walked.
Right.
They walked from an entirely different place. They walked from Edenton. Well, from Wiley's house, which is around there. But so they fill in the ladies, all the ladies. Jamie says, quote, "If you only took a finger or one of his balls, he might survive," unquote. He's not wrong.
Well, I mean, Blackjack survived.
Oh, gosh. Fergus arrives. I didn't think about it that way. Oh, my goodness. So is this a Fraser thing? Like,
they always go for the balls. I mean, it's
shooting or injuring your rapist in the balls?
When there's honor involved on the line, absolutely.
Yeah, fair enough. Fergus arrives later that day. Again, day five-ish. Land deeds registered, stamped, and sealed. Now, these were two land grants. Remember the one that Jamie got? As long as he could keep him being Catholic on the down low, and he would be paying back in terms of service and being ready to help Governor Tryon. And Summer, remind me and our dear listeners, why did Roger get a land grant all of a sudden?
Because they almost killed him.
Yes, exactly.
I think getting a plot of land was not enough. I think that
they
should have not only given him that plot of land, but they should have forgiven the Frasers their debts for their land and been like, we're done. We expect nothing else from you. We tried to kill your family. Super sorry about that.
I would have said, let us go out and survey it for you. Let us take the things and register and stamp and seal them for you and have a gilded carriage bring you the grants, signed, sealed, delivered to your home.
We all know that wasn't
going to
happen.
80 million miles away. Well, come on.
I mean, they were trying to thwart a revolution. They're a little busy.
Are you looking for a fun way to pass the time while engaging your brain and enjoying breathtaking visuals and a gripping story? Then Best Fiends is the game for you. Best Fiends is a unique and exciting puzzle experience unlike other puzzle games out there.
Best Fiends is a casual game that anyone can play, but made for adults. Spend as much or as little time as you'd like. I'm currently on level 23, if I remember correctly. How about you, Sam?
Not to brag, but I am currently on level 296. Like, I'm literally so close to level 300, I can taste it. Now, I am usually not into bugs, but these little guys are so stinking cute. Now, I can't guarantee that this game will turn you into an insect or spider lover, but I personally have brokered a truce with the spider that lives in my shower. In this world of seemingly endless lines and wait times, Best Fiends is a great game to pass the time. I have been known to play this game while waiting for doctor's appointments, in line at the grocery store, even at coffee shops during the morning rush.
Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play.
That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Jamie decided he and Claire would ride to River Run right away, and the others would stay in Wilmington and keep an ear out for a wounded Bonnet. And then after a sufficient amount of time had passed, which I don't think we get, they were to make their way home to the Ridge. Eugenia E. writes, "The narration of this episode by Davina Porter raised my expectations for the upcoming season 5. When I listened to Davina reading this episode, my expectations for the season got very high. As many of us know, she has an uncanny ability to switch voices depending who is talking. Depending on who is talking. She goes from Germain to Marsali, Jemmy to Granny Claire, or Brianna to Bonnet. The whole incident is so good that I hope they keep it as intact as possible. I can't wait to see Germain saying, 'Maman, shoot him like a porcupine,' or 'Maman shot the bad man, grandpère, he was full of holes, there was blood everywhere.' And then we, Jemmy, echoing, 'Holes, holes, lots of holes.'"
Hyperbole.
So, question for you. Do you think they're going to keep the gold slash wolf slash whatever? Do you think they'll keep it so as to have to resolve it in the way that they did? Will the gold be there? Will there be gold?
I don't know.
Well, duh. Come on. You're not helping me.
Well, no, because I'm thinking about it because I want to give
you... I need a new co-host, y'all. Who wants to help me out?
No. I think you need to more clearly state the rules of the game before you invite me to play with you.
There's no game. It's a question.
It's a game because if everything with you feels like a trivia quiz.
No, I like, want to know what you
at
think.
The trivia night at the pub, and I'm getting asked questions, and something very exciting is on the line.
I'm not quizzing you. I'm asking your opinion. Do you think there's going to be gold at River Run in the show? It's not a trivia question because none of us knows.
Well, here's the thing. We don't know how much of anything is going to be in there. And I hesitate for several reasons. First of which being, every time I say they definitely are going to keep that, it's on the floor. Secondly, anytime I say, oh, they're cutting that for sure, it's in the show. But this, because of the whole Duncan thing, Duncan squared. So we have Duncan LaCroix. So we have Murta and Duncan coming back. And that whole thing, because I don't know how they have reworked the main plot line to accommodate this butterfly effect timeline we now have. I don't feel like I could even give a guesstimate, an educated guesstimate.
Okay, without spoiling it, I will say, consider later books. Do you think it's necessary to have the gold in there?
Well, you, Ginger, I think need to remember one thing. This is the last book in this series I have read more than once.
Okay.
So that being said, as we got to the end of this book, things were becoming more like, oh, I've totally forgot about that. And I feel like further books are going to be even worse because while I will remember the main large plot points, because those are impossible to not remember, minutia type items, I'm not as golden on. And I'm not sure if I can accurately recall this coming back up in large ways. Isn't there a fire somewhere and it has to be retrieved?
Let's stop.
Okay. Then don't ask me questions you don't want the answer to.
It's not a trivia question, so it's not a right or wrong answer. It's an opinion question. And I totally understand that you don't remember enough to give an educated guess based on future. So that's fine. The answer to that question, your opinion to that question is fine. That's it. You don't have to answer it or say that, whatever. I just mean this book alone, without even going forward in your mind, what do you think? Do you think they'll keep the gold without going forward?
I mean, and it's already come up.
When?
The Frenchman's gold. In previous, it's the whole reason they went out to the Silky Island, because they thought it was the Frenchman's gold.
They knew that's where the jewels and everything was kept.
Yeah, but there was the people who went out there thought that it was connected Bayless to the Frenchman's people. Gold. All right, moving right along to chapter 104, entitled Sly as Foxes. And this is another gigantic Grange chapter.
Claire and Jamie get their River Run on. It takes 3 days. Dang. They're ready for just about anything. When they get to the house, Claire knows immediately something is wrong. Jocasta answers the door. So, wait, isn't it Fedra? Did I write that down wrong?
I think it's Fedra, because Jocasta's upstairs in her room.
So what's going on? Duncan's hurt. Turns out he has a tibial fracture. Wolf had indeed been there 2 days earlier. He'd arrived on foot, but he didn't come up to the house. He waited out in the field. When Duncan went out after dark, to use the privy, he sprang at him and fired. But Duncan, he must have missed, because Duncan, they kind of scrabble, they fight-ish. Duncan headbutts him, and they both go down. But as they were fighting or scrabbling, he kind of missteps on a board or something. I think it's near the privy, and he ends up breaking his leg. Ulysses hears him calling and comes out with Joe, Jocasta. Wolf was knocked out cold, I'm guessing. He was still on the ground. And they leave him there, and they help Duncan to the house. And then Jocasta has Ulysses kill Wolf.
No, I thought it was a self-defense thing.
Oh, no. They left him. He wasn't dead.
That's how.
Well, if he may have been hurt, but they left him on the ground, and then he went back out and killed him. They had to have left and come back because Jocasta can't help Duncan get to the house. Unless he killed him right there in front of him. But if I remember correctly, they went back to the house and then Ulysses, and they were like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? And then Ulysses went and took care of him. Erica B. writes, Would you call it a grande for the fact that they show up shortly after Duncan is injured? What a coincidence. Lieutenant Wolf is awfully shady. Who leaps out at a man about to use the privy? Clearly, it couldn't have been good, for he left his horse a ways off to not create noise.
Well, I mean, it depends on the reason you're jumping out at somebody at the privy. If you had just used the privy and there was a rattlesnake in the bottom of it, you'd probably jump out to stop the person who's going to use it next and be like, whoa, whoa, dude, snake in there.
If Wolf solely wanted not to disturb the household out of politeness, he would have waited and approached during the day or even simply not attacked Duncan. But what to do? Jamie asks if Duncan could say that he'd killed him in self-defense of himself and Jocasta, whom he'd wanted to wed for the gold. Duncan has no gold. He's like, wait, gold? What gold? Duncan has no idea what they're talking about. Ulysses cuts his throat. So this is where he goes and does it. And then he goes into hiding, or he's gone. Who knows? We don't find out where he is right now. Eric B. writes, I can't imagine being Ulysses at this point, riding into the wilderness, an unknown land with no idea who he would run into and how he would be treated. One thing I do appreciate is the sense that Jocasta has enough respect for her slaves, or at least Ulysses, to not be the type of owner to kill him for shedding the blood of a white man, regardless of the circumstances.
That would be a pretty much dick move to be like, kill that man, and now I'm going to kill you for killing that man that I just told you to kill.
So where is Wolf? Where do they put his body? I love this. It's still in the barbecue pit.
See, it was straight out of Fried Green Tomatoes. I thought for sure they were going to pull the Fried Green Tomatoes.
So Jamie and Claire have a discussion about what to do with the body. Dump him in the river or burn him. But Jamie has a better idea. They head to the mausoleum. They'll put him in Hector's grave.
And he's not the first one to have this idea.
Yep. And he knocks some of the blocks off the grave and says, and they start smelling this really foul smell. And then Jocasta's voice comes out. So she is, and Fedra's following her. She's come out and she's following them. She has followed them and she is, or has had help out there. And she is like panicked. And she's like, what's up, fam? Jamie tells her, he's taking care of Wolf. Go back to bed, auntie. And she says, he must not open the tomb. She is freaking out. No, 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 you mustn't.
You know what you do when somebody says that to you? Keep on going.
The smell of death comes out even more. He continues to open it. Eric B. writes, is there no actual door to the mausoleum? I found this part confusing because I assumed there was as Jamie opened the gate, but it appears as though that's not the gate to it. Why else would he be smashing his way in? I think because it's like not boarded up, but blocked up, like with, if not marble, then bricks and cement or something that keeps it closed, right? Because it should be somewhat airtight because it's bodies or at least coffins.
Yeah, I don't think you would trust a mausoleum on your own property to have a door that opened and closed easily.
So he continues to open it. And so there was inside, there were the two coffins and a dead dude between the coffins. Jocasta says it was Dr. Rawlings. Hector had killed him. He'd meant to get rid of the body, but then he got sick and died himself. And so he couldn't do it. So she had him moved here. Erica B. writes, we find out who it is. And can we say Grange again?
See?
Dr. Rawlings? I mean, what are the odds that it's the Dr. Rawlings, the one in the same that previously owned Claire's implements? And the second coffin was Jocasta's. Claire is thinking, who leaves a dead man unburied when there's a perfectly good coffin there? Right? Mm-hmm. They're like, we'll put Wolf in, fine. In her coffin? No, she says. Jamie climbs down into the hole. He's like, we got to see what the heck's going on. Phaedra is with her mistress and she's moaning in the background. Erica B. writes, twice now, Jamie ignored his aunt's wishes and twice he was surprised by the contents. He is lucky she is blind, for I feel like he would have paid dearly for these actions. He has revealed a couple secrets this chapter and barely batted an eyelash going with the flow of it all. So Jamie opens up the lid of Jocasta's coffin, and all he has to say is, oh, It's the Frenchman's gold. This is what Rawlings had seen and why he'd drawn the fleur de lis in his casebook and the symbol for aurum gold. What to do? They dump Wolf with Hector, take Rawlings out, and they're going to bury him in our peaceful Ridge Cemetery to join Ottertooth Skull.
You know, they're so concerned about ghosts and spirits. Oh, yeah. They're going to talk about spirits. Can we talk about Jocasta roaming around in the middle of the night in her white nightdress? I'm like, she's the one who's going to make people think there's ghosts.
Yeah. Eugenia E. writes, this chapter exposes a can of worms inside Hector Cameron's mausoleum. I can't wait to watch this scene play out. Never in a million years would I have thought that Dr. Rawlings, whom we have grown fond of through Claire, was decomposing between Hector and Jocasta's tombs. Or that the French gold, which had been considered urban legend to me, had been kept at Jocasta's gravesite, or in her coffin, actually. A very intelligent hiding place. DG's imagination doesn't cease to amaze me. Another thing that made me laugh was that Jamie wants to bring Dr. Rawlings' body to Fraser's Ridge and respectfully bury him on friendly ground.
She's collecting skulls.
I guess he also has grown fond of Dr. Rawlings through Claire. Ha ha ha. And finally, Erica B. writes, I think this chapter really shows how understanding and non-judgmental Jamie and Claire are. They do what needs to be done and don't scold the one in trouble. This is a generally constant outlook and behavior for the two of them. How very progressive of them.
I just honestly don't think Diana can, like, help herself. Like, I feel like Dr. Rollins' body being in there was a tie that didn't need to be tied up. You know what I mean? It was like, I mean, it's cute. It's interesting that, you know, all those things are connected. But it would have still been a good story, even if they weren't. So it's like she kind of casually mentioned, oh, nobody know what happened, like in a previous books. Mm. No one knows what happened to the doctor, but they have his medicine bag. And I bought it. Here's my present to you.
It didn't necessarily have to be tied up, except that she included that he drew a fleur-de-lis and a symbol of AU. So she was telegraphing
that. Absolutely she was. But my point is that she didn't have to.
I agree.
Like, they still could have gotten to the same end point without that.
Yeah, they could have said, okay, well, we'll put him in Jocasta's thing for now. And then she could have still freaked out and all that.
I just think tying up Rollins' mysterious death was not necessary, but I feel like she just couldn't help herself.
That's funny.
Anywho, moving right along, we are finishing this week's penultimate read-along session. I'm going to say it now every time because I know I'm saying it right. With chapter 105 entitled A Thrush's Dream.
We are back on Fraser's Ridge, thank goodness. It is May 1772. Bree and Raj are naked and lying on each other. Bree's not mad that he's invaded her dream journal. Yeah, Diana needed to wrap this up too. Quote, I didn't ever tell you not to read it, unquote. I thought, that's odd. I mean, is that a reason? It's like, should she have to tell him not to read it? That's not really a good thing.
It's a journal. It's like a diary.
It's weird.
No, well, here's the thing.
That was an odd response.
She did tell him, because they used to be her sketching pad, right? Her sketching journal?
That's separate from her dream journal.
Okay, then I'm misremembering. So move on.
She trusted that he would never use those things against her. But she said, to be fair, tell me some of yours dreams. One important one.
She's like, but to be fair, I've been spicing them up a lot once I realized you were reading them.
You notice that, how they progressively got spicier?
Notice how they were all about cunnilingus at the end?
Oh, Lord Summer. Kate O. writes, I love that after finding that he's read her dream book, she's not mad because all of her dreams are safe with him. She's not betrayed or embarrassed. She trusts him. Diana is so good at just throwing little details in, like, quote, would it be this time? Unquote. It makes you hopeful or eager for them, especially since it was such a contentious subject for a while. And then he tells her his one important dream. Quote, sometimes I dream I am singing, and I wake from it with my throat aching. What are you singing? No song I've ever heard or know, he said softly, but I know I'm singing it for you. Kate O. wraps us up with, of course, just the title of this chapter gives you a clue. He's no longer his former nickname, yet another identity taken from him. But as he said in the beginning of the book, he would always sing for Brianna. So if he's having a dream that he's able to sing again, it could only be for her.
And that was chapter 105. It was barely a page, guys. I mean,
it was short.
I mean, if it was a half a page on one side and half a page on the other, so if you put it together, it was just over a page. Anyway, join us next week when we will be concluding, can you believe it? Concluding a year in the making, concluding our The Fiery Cross read-along with chapters 106, entitled The Surgeon's Book Number 2, 107, entitled Zug und Ruhe, 108, entitled Tulach Ard, 109, The Voice of Time, 110, Man of Blood, and 111, And Yet Go Out to Meet It. They're all relatively short chapters except for The Voice of Time, which you would expect The Voice of Time to be very long-winded. And as always, if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, head on over to our Facebook group entitled The Outlander Pod, and you can get there at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And a special thanks to co-producer of this episode, 323, Anna L. Find out more about supporting us on Patreon at outlanderpod.com/Patreon. And thank you to our sponsors, Brooklinen and Best Fiends. Remember, when you support our sponsors, you are helping support this show as well. And thank you all so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode, the last one about the Fiery Cross.
Doo-doo.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlanderPod.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.